explain it to you real quick.
We'll go with it. Okay, I'm ready. You guys ready?
Let's go.
All right, we already got the marker and everything. Okay, good. So one of the things, Stefan, that I'm fascinated about with you, and that is I've gotten to know you over a couple of years,
okay,
is I'm fascinated where you came from. You know, you, I think to me, you're an American success story. And as Alzheimer's becomes even more successful, it's going to be clear about your background. So maybe you could talk about where you came from, because I think it's a fascinating story.
Not that fascinating, but okay.
Oh, it's fascinating.
So I was born and raised in South America in Guyana. You know, most people know Guyana because of Jim Jones.
Right.
And the massacre that took place there.
The Kool-Aid, right.
So I have Kool-Aid, exactly. So, you know, good thing about it is that I never drank the Kool-Aid, so that's good. So
how far were you away from Jonestown?
Jonestown is probably about 50 miles out of Georgetown.
So, what, Georgetown?
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Georgetown, Guyana, which is the capital. Most of the people from Guyana lives in Georgetown.
And when did you move to the United States?
I moved to the United States in 1987.
Wow.
So, yeah, so I moved in 1987, came here, lived in New Jersey, and went to high school and then college in New Jersey.
Oh, so you went to high school there? Because I know you attended Stevens Institute of Technology.
Right? I did.
Mm-hmm. You got your master's there from too, right?
I got my bachelor's and master's. Bachelor's in mechanical engineering, and I was more of a geek in school, so I loved science and math. Mm-hmm. And so I majored in steam and nuclear power plant designs.
Wow.
Hated that.
Really?
When it's time to graduate, and you know, and I realized all the companies that were coming to interview you.
Sure.
And I was, you know, I had a job offer from Knowles Atomic Power Laboratories, Westinghouse, and I was like, oh, is that what I'm going to be doing?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Wow. I really don't want to do this. I was like, you know, I wanted to be someplace, you know, pretty much corporate, learning different, you know, skills. And I said, well, this is really going to be like 100% math and calculating in science. So L'Oreal actually came and said, you know, hey, we're looking for someone in our management program. They're going to be traveling internationally. You know, they're going to be going to France, Italy, Germany. I was like, sign me up, sign me up. That's the one I want to do.
So for those of you who don't know, Stefan is the CEO of Alzheimer Neuro, a biotech based in Tampa, Florida, with two drug treatments. One is a immunotherapy vaccine for Alzheimer's, and one is a co-crystal lithium-based treatment for Alzheimer's. They call it aggravation, right?
Agitation. So basically, one is a lithium co-crystal for agitation with patients with Alzheimer's, mm-hmm. and that's to slow the progression mm-hmm. of Alzheimer's potentially. Mm-hmm. And the other is a immunotherapeutic vaccine that we anticipate will be a prophylactic and cure for Alzheimer's.
We hope, obviously.
We hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody, we're making sure we're not claiming it is a cure. We're saying we hope it's a
cure.
That's
what I said, anticipate.
Yeah, yeah. I tend to, people, since I've been on Wall Street so long, and people that the people that do know me, I tend to, anything I say, you got to put in front of that, we hope. That's
anticipate that it will
So you're you're the CEO of Alzheimer's Neuro. I would know this because I made sure you were hired.
Of course.
Which is a little fascinating for the audience to know that I founded Alzheimer's Neuro 4.5 years ago, and was never the CEO, but we wanted to bring a guy in, or girl, woman, anybody who we thought was talented enough to bring the drugs to market. And Stefan became the leading candidate, and we eventually hired him. I think, how long ago did we hire you?
About a year ago.
Yeah. And he's done a remarkable job, and we've got some great success with the FDA. And it's in an area that I really care about, most of the audience that know me know my father has Alzheimer's, my mother-in-law died from it, and a series of family members have. And so we're trying to do really something remarkable, and that is potentially slow the progression of Alzheimer's, treat it, and hopefully have a vaccine for it. And Stefan, so now that everyone knows that you're the CEO of Alzheimer's Neuro, let's go backwards. So you graduate, you get a master's from Stevens Institute of Technology, and you decide to go and you work for L'Oreal. And I'll let you skip around a little bit. Well, you go to work for L'Oreal.
So
I think you were there for what? 5 years or
3 years. So I graduated with my bachelor's. I went into corporate. Mm. So I went to work for L'Oreal in a management program.
Mm.
At that time, I think they called it the Command Program. Now it's called the Explorer Program. But it was a program where you start from the ground up and you learn the business. And within 5 years being with the company, you'd be senior management within the organization.
Right.
So after 3 years, I left the organization to go to Novartis. I was recruited away by Novartis Pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, they have what I know about L'Oreal, they have a really impressive management training program.
They do.
They have got an impressive track record. So you probably enjoyed your time there.
I did.
What'd you do there?
It was a lot of fun.
What'd you do
there? So I worked in pretty much project management, quality, and manufacturing supply chain. So it's a chance of, you know, they pretty much sent me to Paris. I was in Stuttgart and Bologna, Italy. So Stuttgart, Germany, and Bologna, Italy. So kind of traveled, you know, around the world for the company and understanding, you know, how the products are made and how to pretty much mass produce any kind of lipstick, nail polish, mascara, Plenitudes, which are lotions, and eye pencils. So it was a lot of fun. I loved it. So dealing with a lot of the manufacturing process and, you know, how clean, you know, the manufacturing floor and the processing vessels are. So it was really good. Learning all the regulatory mandates and then taking that with me to go to Novartis was pretty good.
So it sets,
I thought it was
going
to be a huge learning gap, but it really wasn't.
So it sets the stage for you to go to Novartis, and you go to Novartis, and I believe you were there a little bit more than 8 years, right?
I was.
And what did you do at Novartis? Because I know that they've been, in fact, my understanding is Novartis is really the last company to have anything even really approved in the Alzheimer's space, the Exelon patch, right?
Novartis came out with the Epsilon patch in 2007.
Right.
They came out with the original Exelon pill in 2004. And when I moved over to Novartis, at first I was in manufacturing, you know, kind of jumping around management process. And so I started in manufacturing and did it for about a year, didn't really like it. You know, I said I wanted to do something a little bit different. So, you know, I kind of, you know, met with management and said, you know, okay, I want to do something a little bit more. And they said, well, how about we put you on strategic projects, you know, learning, you know, the business here, and we'll put you on all our major initiatives that we're rolling out from the company. And so I pretty much did that, you know, a lot of projects, I think totaling over $500 million, you know, of global initiatives that they did.
So, and like L'Oreal, Novartis is a global business. Did you have any global experience with them? What was your really your
so
area?
So Novartis was pretty much traveling to Basel. You know, the mothership for Novartis or the global headquarters is in Basel, and they also have an office in Cambridge, Massachusetts. That's the NIBR Center, which is biomedical research, and they have a corporate office in New York City, and that's pretty much where investor relations sits. And then the main campus, which is a 500-acre campus, that's in East Hanover, New Jersey. So that's pretty much out of East Hanover, New Jersey. There's about 7,000 employees, about 39 buildings on site. So, you know, if you meet someone, you'll pretty much, you know, when I started in 2002 with the company, I met a bunch of people on the day that I was hired and have never seen them again.
So you leave Novartis eventually, and this is where it gets interesting, because I know you were helping a lot of companies in biopharma and other spaces. So what did you do after Novartis?
So after Novartis, I sat on the board while I was at Novartis. Novartis was really encouraging. They wanted their employees to be active within the community. So I sat on the board of a nonprofit organization, a few, and I decided to join and became the head of development and marketing for a nonprofit in New Jersey. Health and Human Services. So I kind of, you know, had the calling and decided, hey, you know, hey, I want to help people. Since I did it from an angle of, you know, big pharma and having that experience of, you know, really impacting society and helping, you know, patients, you know, I wanted to do something from a different, you know, standpoint of Health and Human Services and really raising, you know, funds to help people within the community. And this particular organization helps about 10,000 people per year. Children and families who are at risk of being, of the kids being taken away from the families. And so I joined that organization for about 2 years, you know, told the founder and CEO of the company, I'd be here for about 2 years, then I'm going to move on and probably go back into pharma. I don't know at what level that I wanted to go. So I decided that my skills would probably be better utilized in biotech. You know, that way you get to really have a lot of say in terms of how the drug's being developed and be nimble enough to use your skills to be creative. As you know, it takes a lot to get a drug to market. And from a biotech point of view, yes, you have a lot of say in terms of what happened, but the fundraising aspect of it is very difficult. But it's a challenge that I wholeheartedly accept, and I think that I was that I could be good at it. And thus far, I think it's been a challenge, but I think, you know, we're going to be very successful.
So when you were approached, and I know there's some other important work you did in biotech, helping other biotech companies, and we can come back to that. But when you were approached about the idea of working for a company that's focused on trying to slow down the progression or potentially cure Alzheimer's. I mean, you know that really that's been kind of the holy grail. No one's really been able to do that. I don't think there's really been any real, real developments since Dr. Alzheimer's, you know, found the disease. Really, it's one of the rare diseases where nothing's really progressed. I know there's been some really ancillary stuff, but I mean, when you were approached with that, what was your thought process for taking the job?
Well, you know, although Alzheimer's is the most feared disease and I'm the sixth leading cause of death in the United States, mm-hmm. I think you're pretty much the one who convinced me to take the job. I think listening to your story, you really were. I mean, listening to your story about how you found the company mm-hmm. and how you were sitting in your living room and realizing how your family's been afflicted by this disease and, you know, the fact that, you know, you're pretty much going to be dying from it. You're mm-hmm. going to be impacted. Your wife is going to be impacted. Your four kids are going to be impacted.
Sure.
You know, I thought, I was like, this is finally someone who is taking a stand and doing something about it. And I thought, I was just like, how heroic is that? And I would definitely want to get behind someone like that. And
well, I don't know if it was heroic, but
it was heroic. I consider it to be a huge deal.
Well, I'm excited that you're part of it. The development so far is one of the things that I think is interesting is we made a decision to keep the overhead low, unlike some biotechs, which really have a big overhead. You run the company almost virtual with an outside CRO, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about your experience and the way you're operating the business from almost a virtual perspective, the partnership with USF and the team you're developing right now? Because I think it's an interesting model. It's really the cost structure is really for what you've spent and where you are. It's remarkable.
Oh, definitely. I think you can always when it comes down to farm and developing, I think it's most important to stay laser focused on the science. There's nothing else that's more important. And I think, you know, you're always looking at the timeline and knowing that your family's impacted by it and affected. I think the most important part is getting the drug to the clinic. And, you know, it just makes sense to cut costs and really minimize the impact and have a low budget. And just having a virtual company with strategic partners, you know, having the CRO being also not on site, you know, they're remote. Also having your partnership with the university where you license the technology from, you know, having them part of your team, you know, and having, you know, a low overhead.
You've also managed to line up a pretty amazing team, an advisory board of the who's who and Alzheimer's, which is, you know, with Wesniewski and others.
I think it's all about relying on your Rolodex. Right. You know, I think, you know, I've worked in this business for over 13 years. And, you know, I've met a lot of people, you know, and I have a lot of mentors within the industry. So I always reach back out to just about everyone who can do it. And I think, you know, what we're doing is a neurological. Novartis has a huge neurology department. You know, Otsuka Pharmaceuticals have one as well. You know, I even have friends at Abbott Laboratories, Glaxo, as well as Celgene. So I think with that, you know, you should never think about doing something on your own. And there's always people who you can rely on that mm-hmm. will help you to get to where you want to get, to where you want to go.
Oh, so for those of you who are learning for the first time about Alzheimer Neuro that are watching, it's important if you care about Alzheimer's to learn about these two drugs, specifically about Lipersol. I've been at this a while, and my family's affected. And those of you who are watching, who your families are affected by Alzheimer's, this will be something that you're ahead of the curve on, that you'll learn about today, that the general public does not know about. And a lot of people, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, have given up on this space. A lot of pharmaceutical companies have failed at what they're doing, right?
Yes, they have.
And with Lipersol, and I really think that people that have family members with dementia or Alzheimer's or potentially have it are going to care a lot about this drug in the future. So I was wondering maybe you could talk about Lipersol and what you thought, what it could potentially do. We're talking about potential. The promise of the fact that there's four compounds that are already approved. For those of you who don't know, this drug is owned by Alzheimer Neuro, of course, the company you're CEO of. I wonder if you could talk about, I really think, it's my personal opinion, I'm not a scientist, but everything I've read and been told by the people that work with us, the external community, the consultants and people that really have no vested interest in telling me what I want to hear, I'm really excited about it. I wonder if you could tell the public about it a little bit, to the extent you're willing to go into the details.
Well, gladly. So the first drug that we have is a lithium coal crystal. And as you know, lithium has been in existence for a century. And currently, lithium has been approved by the FDA for bipolar disorder. However, it's used off-label for PTSD, suicidality, and depression. The problem with lithium is that it's highly toxic. And so when you do take it, you have to have your blood monitored on a regular basis to make sure that, you know, the side effects and everything else
is
not toxic.
The monitoring is very costly.
Which is very costly. So most doctors do not prescribe lithium. However, if you ask most doctors, they would love to prescribe lithium, but the costly, you know, the basically what you have to do to be on that regimen, it costs a lot of money. Most doctors would love to prescribe lithium. However, it's just too costly. Our lithium, on the other hand, is co-crystallized, so which means that we have a greater therapeutic index, which allows us to administer a lower dosage, and it gives you a greater bioavailability and biodistribution. So potentially what we anticipate is that our lithium, you won't have to have your blood monitor, and it's not going to be as costly as the current lithium market.
And I've seen some of the results, the preclinical results that were phenomenal. Can you talk about what you know about lithium being used for Alzheimer's patients and other studies? Because I understand that there has been progress with lithium, but the toxicity has really been the problem.
Exactly. So there have been clinical trials that have been conducted for lithium. Mm. However, you know, the clinical trials, the results, which were excellent, showed that lithium does impact Alzheimer's disease, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of tau phosphorylation and beta amyloid, which are the biomarkers for Alzheimer's disease. The problem with it is that as you increase the dosage, patients have died. Mm-hmm. So they've stopped that process. We anticipate that, you know, being that our lithium is a little bit better and can be administered at a lower dosage, we do anticipate that our lithium will pass and be even more successful than the current lithium on the market.
Mm-hmm. That's a pretty big market for lithium, right? And in terms of
the patient population for lithium alone is about potentially 34 million people.
And another 6 million for Alzheimer's.
Just about, yes.
Right.
Our lithium is less toxic and therefore a potential treatment for Alzheimer's disease.
Right. That's an interesting soundbite. So the genesis of Liposol and there are studies out there now that you've used lithium in the past and they've tried it before, the toxicity. So theoretically, our window of our therapeutic window is going to be bigger, be smaller dosage, last longer, and
absolutely.
We've kind of, because I've seen some of the data, we've already kind of know where we think we're going with this. But what's the process going to be with the FDA? I know we're set to pursuing a 505(b)(2) path. What do you think the process is for this in terms of helping the community? Because I think that we need to make it clear to people that there's really two opportunities here, right? There's an opportunity to treat, you know, 34 million plus people for psychiatric care, right, with lithium's already used for, but on a less toxic basis, saving a lot of money for the medical industry, right?
As well as healthcare. An additional 6 million for neurodegenerative.
Right.
And lithium has so many medicinal properties and purposes that we anticipate that it can also impact the other neurodegenerative diseases, which is Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, ALS as well.
Wow.
So, one of the members of our scientific advisory board has actually mentioned that lithium would be a great therapeutic for traumatic brain injury as well.
Hmm.
So you're talking about all the sports players and, you know, all the all the veterans, you know, that are impacted by, you know, TBI.
So one of the things that I want the audience to get from this interview, Because I'm sure some of them are saying, wait, you're interviewing a CEO who works for the company you founded. Yeah, well, that's the whole point about what I do for a living, right? And that is, you know, we buy undervalued assets and disruptive technology with a global impact. I can think of nothing more global impactful than what you're working on, Stefan.
Absolutely.
So in getting to the crux of, before we go to Child22W, how Liprosol you think can help them, and that is, so far, what, and let's just see if we agree on this and making sure that we can communicate this to the audience. Because I really want you, if you're, for the listeners, the people watching this and listening to this, and those of you who exercise, you just listen to the audio, I want you to take away that if you have someone in your family with Alzheimer's, we're trying to help. And so on top of the fact that we already know lithium is a very powerful drug that's toxic, and we're trying to remove the toxicity or lower the potential for toxicity, we hope for another endpoint, which is that it slows the progression of Alzheimer's and restores cognitive function. Can you talk yes. about what that would look like in terms of, you know, we expect to go into patients shortly. How long do you think it would be before this could be available to the public? And that's, you know, and I know that you're just speculating, but we're just guessing here. But how long do you think before something this important could be available to the public?
So we're going after a 505(b)(2) process, which is a fast track within the FDA. This is considered to be a repurposed technology since lithium is already been approved, mm-hmm. you know, by the FDA. So we're allowed to skip a certain amount of steps. So we anticipate that we can get this drug commercially viable within 18 to 36 months, which would be fantastic.
Which would be fast, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fast for...
Because usually the typical development period is 5 to 7 years, or even longer, depending on your results that you have within phase 1, 2, and 3. So I think this is fantastic. I mean, just to think about, you know, as the years progress, last year it was about 5.2 million people with Alzheimer's. Now it's 5.8 million people. Mm. And as the years progress, it's just going to be more and more. So by 2022, you know, you're going to have way over 6 million people, you know, suffering from Alzheimer's.
Right.
And just the economic impact in general within the United States is over $200 billion. And so, you know, just the families and the caregivers who are impacted by this, I mean, it's catastrophic. And I think it takes a huge toll on families.
It's a very expensive process. So, very expensive. So obviously, we, you and I, we want to help as many people as we can. That's what we started. That's why I started Alzheimer's Neuro. That's why you came to work here, and run the company. But the unit economics are also important. It is a company that's raised capital from investors. And for the investors out there watching, I don't know if you can go into it, but with a patient population of 41 million, how big of a drug could this be?
Well, let's put it this way. The last Wall Street Journal article that came out, they said the next big Alzheimer's drug is going to be worth easily $18 billion. Mm-hmm. You know, so when you think about the patient population that we have, I mean, the numbers are staggering.
Right.
You're talking this would be a drug that potentially can bring you about $18 billion a year. And that's just for one drug.
Yeah, and it's hard to believe that this, you know, that you got a patent worldwide and a composition of matter. You got an amazing drug. It's making amazing progress. Coming out of a little company, it's going to be kind of a, David and Goliath kind of thing, isn't it?
It's a massive undertaking. I think this is something that we probably definitely have to partner with a larger pharmaceutical company, you know, to in order to commercialize this product. This is something that, you know, you're talking sales force that you'd have to hire, you know, internal, you know, investor relations and marketing, and, you know, in terms of what you have to do, it's going to be epic.
So for the investors out there, you expect to go into 505(b)(2), that's your hope.
Definitely.
And then gather all that great data in phase 2, and then eventually partner with a big pharmaceutical that'll want to roll this out. I know we're boring you at home a little bit, but it's important for the investors and the community looking to be able to have the drug available, what that means. And effectively, you skip into a phase 2 process because lithium's already approved. You rely on some of that safety data. But you can talk about that process a little bit.
So the process would be, it's an expedited process. So we anticipate that our phase 1 is going to take less than a year, typically. And you skip right into a phase 2. You know, you get to minimize the time as well on the phase 2 and the phase 3. And sometimes we'd probably be able to combine them. And that's based on your partnership with the FDA. You know, the FDA is very amenable to working with companies, since Alzheimer's is an unmet need. You know, I think there's something that we're all looking to have some, you know, the next best therapeutic on the market, and the FDA it's very heightened and concerned about the 5.8 million people suffering from Alzheimer's. So they will partner with, you know, any company that has a novel, you know, therapeutic in their pipeline. And I think for us, you know, I think we do have that, and I think they will partner with us, and we'll be able to expedite this. So we anticipate that we'd be in the clinic first quarter of 2020.
Yeah, I was thinking about the unmet need, and for the audience to understand that there's really not been any real treatment for Alzheimer's of any substantive notion for forever, basically.
Not at all.
I mean,
there's four drugs on the market currently, and none of them impact the disease.
Right. Positively. And so one of the things that I think we're hoping for is to get that unmet need status because of the data. And I've seen the data, and it's promising. It's pretty
absolutely
remarkable data. And those of you who are probably interested in the drug, you can go to Alzamend, Alzamend.com, and you can get on the mailing list. It's going to be important to be there, especially if you have a loved one or family member, to track what's going on with the drug that it was developed at the University of South Florida. These are important developments. We'll come back to Liprosol in a second. It's okay. Exciting. I don't think people realize how big a deal it is. I know we've been able to fly a little under the radar.
It's a huge deal. It's something that, you know, we're kind of keeping it contained for mm-hmm. now, you know, but
I think this may be the first like public interview you and I have ever done.
It is.
Right. So I think that if the audience can detect, we're a little cautious because we know the data. And the regulators are very strict on what you can say. But I can tell you that it's taking up more and more of my time. It's your full time. You do everything. You're 24/7, 365. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I seem to talk to you any day of the week.
Every day.
You're all over the country trying to make this work with Emory and all the partners you've developed so far. This little company, you've done a remarkable job of getting some great partnerships. So far, so good there. Child-22W, which is the second drug, which was really the first and became
exactly
the second.
Exactly.
Not because we don't love it, but that's more of a vaccine prophylactic and much more complicated than the already existing 505B2, which we just talked about, where you kind of get to skip ahead. This one, we're not going to be able to skip ahead.
Not at all.
Right.
Not at all. This is a totally new invention. You know, this is something that came from the University of South Florida as well, under Dr. Chow. It's invented as a dendritic cell, you know, immunotherapeutic vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
And
this is a mutant peptide.
This is a mutant peptide. So,
right. This is way scientific. This is like Star Trek stuff.
I mean, when you speak to any neurologist, you know, they've talked about, you know, it's like, yeah, you have two drugs in your pipeline, mm-hmm. but we're really interested in the immunotherapeutic vaccine. Forget the lithium. We all know lithium works. That's great. We fine. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're able to come up with a lithium that's non-toxic, you know, or less toxic than what's currently on the market, you're going to hit a home run. But that's for the Wall Street guys to worry about. Mm-hmm. You know, that's really nice, but we're looking for something that's totally inventive and new. And I think, you know, that is, you know, Child-22W.
Yeah,
that is the vaccine.
When he started developing it, Dr. Chow, mm-hmm. immunotherapy was kind of like a joke and people were really not fond of it. Now it's turned into be a big deal. He was kind of ahead of the curve. So talk to us about that life cycle, because that's a much more expensive process. And I like the way you're going about mm-hmm. it, really, which is you're going to go to market with the drug we know will help people right away, that we know is kind of the lower barrier to entry for psychiatric and neurodegenerative, and gets really accelerated if it shows promise for Alzheimer's. And I've seen the data, so I'm really excited.
Absolutely.
As I've said.
But with
Child-22W, mm-hmm. We're talking about scientific stuff that's pretty crazy in terms of potentially hoping it's a cure, right?
So, absolutely.
Can you talk about Child-22W a little bit?
Child-22W, the development life cycle for that, there's no fast track, you know, within the FDA. Mm-hmm. I mean, once you enter phase one, after your results from phase one, which is a full year mm-hmm. Worth of testing, then you can actually get a fast track with the FDA because you have to show that it impacts the disease.
Right.
And so we anticipate that it will show that it impacts the disease. And not by, you know, just minimal numbers. Mm-hmm. You were expected to blow those numbers out of the waters because of what we've seen in our preclinical and in terms of bioequivalence and actually comparing it with what's been out there, you know, the results have been, you know, just extraordinary.
Wow.
And I think it's fantastic. So for that one, we will be entering the clinic in 2020. And we anticipate that that one is going to be just another home run for us. So when we talk about Child 22W, I think, you know, once we're in the clinic, you know, after a year, we'd be able to show that the results are so
compelling.
So compelling that the FDA will partner with us and fast track that as well. You know, we'll get what you call breakthrough status. Once you show that you are impacting the disease, the FDA will give you breakthrough status. And once you have breakthrough status, they literally partner with you to fast track the drug through the clinic. Especially with Alzheimer's being an unmet need, this is something that they would like to get, you know, a new therapy on the market for it as soon as possible. Since there's been so many failures. So, yeah.
I got to think that there's an audience out there that's watching. People care about their family members going, how is this little startup biotech that's 4.5 years old going to possibly treat or slow the progression of Alzheimer's? I think it's important to note the USF has been working on it for years. I mean, more than a decade, right?
Definitely.
And we really have partnered with the university, got a license from them. They're actual owners of the company. They own a stake in the company. And I think it's important for the audience to know that if those of you are not familiar with biotech and big pharma, a lot of small biotechs develop the drugs before big pharma takes them on.
That's exactly what I was going to mention. I was like, either most big pharmas actually began as a small biotech. Amgen, you know, you're talking Genentech, you know, they all began as a small biotech. Mm-hmm. And then they morphed into, once they have a drug approved, it makes billions of dollars. They become a large pharmaceutical company. However, there's a lot of biotechs who just develop the drug, and then when they get to a certain phase one or two or three, then they sell it to a larger pharmaceutical company, or they have a partnership with a larger pharmaceutical company, and you pretty much never hear about the biotech, but most new therapies are actually coming from biotechs.
So I'm already obviously an investor, but for the people out there that are want to invest or considering investing, are already investors, what do you think the path is for their investment? Some of the people have been in a few years. I know there's some new investment that's recently come in. But in terms of your plans, what you'd like to see happen, in an ideal situation, Liprosol continues to develop, gets approved to go into patients. What do you kind of see happening in terms of whether you want to make it, you want to stay in the biotech space, pharma space, or whether you think the drugs ultimately end up in the hands of big pharma?
So I see a lot of different paths, you know, for this drug. You know, I see there's one of the paths is that we can, once we get it to a certain level at the end of phase one, we can actually partner with a larger pharmaceutical company to commercialize the product, or we can decide to take the company public, you know, at a certain point, which will definitely show, you know, results, and it'll bring a lot of positive value to the shareholders who've been with us since the inception of the organization.
Sure.
You know, or the third option would be we can actually sell the drug to a big pharma and they can just take it from there.
Typical path, right?
Continue to develop it.
Right.
So, yeah.
We saw that happen kind of with Harvoni with hepatitis treatment, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Where they got into phase three and they sold before they were done, basically.
Absolutely.
For a relatively big number, but they were actually curing hepatitis C, I think it was, right?
$11.2 billion
right.
They did sell it for. I mean, this is typical of the pharma space. I know there was Sanofi actually purchased a vaccine after phase one for about $2.5 billion.
Wow.
I mean, so there's a lot, you know, when you're talking about pharma and the patient, once the patient population is actually there, and when you look at what, you know, what the cost per patient per year is, I mean, these numbers are pretty massive. So I think, you know, for this, you know, you're talking blockbuster status, the next. And when you say blockbuster status within the pharma industry, it's any drug that brings in over $1 billion revenue per year.
Well,
and next Alzheimer's drug will be a blockbuster.
Of course, I'm excited for the economics. It's great for the investors. But what I'm really excited about is that it really seems like Liprosol to get started and then Child-22W pose an amazing opportunity for patients to be treated and across the psychiatric community too, because I know that the psychiatrists, doctors, and people I've spoken to over the last couple of years have said that they'd love to be able to prescribe it, obviously, and reduce that risk of toxicity.
Definitely.
And that Never understood why lithium works, but it worked amazingly well. I mean, that's an interesting dilemma with lithium, right? You remember? I remember reading about when I was a kid, there was lithium in the water in Kentucky, and there was like a happy community, right?
Absolutely.
And I don't know if people know this, this is a little anecdote, but if you ever remember 7-Up,
7-Up originally was with lithium.
Originally had lithium in it, right? And
made you happier.
Yeah, exactly. So this is exciting, I think, for the what do you think if you're a if you have a family member, a loved one, or yourself have been diagnosed, what can they be doing now to be following the drug and paying attention to its development? I know that the initial studies can be done at Emory University. You know, obviously, loved ones are always looking for something out there. What can they be doing now to track the development of the drug?
Well, I think it's important that they do subscribe. So one of the things that they can do, they can go to our website, Alzamend, ALZAMEND.com, and subscribe to our newsletter.
Right.
But in addition to that, they can also, we will be launching a Regulation A within 90 days.
Yeah, let's talk about that with the audience. So we as a company decided that we would allow the general public, the masses, the average individual investor, not just accredited investors, to own part of the solution. We and there's a couple reasons why. One, it's broad appeal. Two, we want as many people to know about these two drugs. They're developed basically with the University of South Florida and a small team with your executive team. Mm-hmm. And rather than put money into marketing and all the stuff we're doing, we're actually going to basically have our, hopefully our shareholders be word of mouth to the community and help push through the drug as best we can. And for that, we're going to be doing a Regulation A, which is a what they call a Reg A. And that is that the average person, I think, with a net worth that can invest as little as $100 and a maximum 10% of your income, that'll be coming up in the next 90 days or so. That'll be important to continue the development of it. You guys have, you know, you're, as we talked about earlier, you have a strict budget. You're keeping it low cost. I know some of the, I know you came from Novartis where they had billions and billions and billions of dollars. You're operating with a lot less than billions and billions.
You just do an internal project, you know, perspective and scope, and you pretty much get billions of dollars approved to do a project. This is more along the lines of your bootstrapping, grassroots, and just pretty much, you know, dialing for dollars, getting it through the, you know, the process. And I think, you know, we've done a great job thus far of raising funds to really, you know, push this and move this drug through the clinic. And I think it's going to be fantastic. And I think if we have, you know, more people who would like to be involved in the process, it just helps, you know, to build a community and everyone gets involved. It's, you know, it's a cure for all.
Right.
And it impacts everyone, you know, the entire family. And so for our families to get involved, then, you know, everyone else who's impacted by, you know, by this disease to get involved, or even if you're not impacted by the disease, I think everyone on a daily basis or that I meet knows someone who has Alzheimer's. So I think, you know, even the people in the room here, you know, I think
one in six of us, right?
Exactly. We all know someone, and it's like every 65 seconds, someone is diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. So I think, you know, it's something that's not going away.
$230 billion a year in cost, healthcare cost alone.
Absolutely.
I think it's important for the audience to go Google lithium for Alzheimer's and see that there is a history here. And with our new drug, basically lowering that toxicity level, there's a lot of promise here to help patients.
And I always say that in an informed investor or an informed supporter is the best kind of advocate to have for your organization. And most important, you know, people should go to clinical trials, clinicaltrials.gov, and definitely look this up. If you look up lithium on clinicaltrials.gov, you'll see about 10 to 20 preclinical trials that have been administered for Alzheimer's, and you'll see the results have shown that it does impact the disease.
So I want to make sure that the audience knows, listen, we are not soliciting you to be an investor. We care deeply about the disease. I care about it. Stefan's team cares about it. So regardless of whether you're an investor or someone concerned about a family member or just want to help, go to the website and check out what we're doing. It's important to get the word out to the Alzheimer's community that will be available. And so whether you're an advocate for it or someone who's concerned about a loved one, it's not just about investing. There's a lot of people that want to invest, so we're not really worried about that. It's really a promising treatment. So go there and hopefully you'll be able to pass along this to someone you care about. I think I want to get back to you a little bit. We started the interview about your history, coming from a foreign country. I think you're kind of an American success story. But when we first met, we talked about African Americans that are in biotech, and there is an African American CEO for Merck. But what's the background been for you in the sense of being in biotech, being an African American, running a biotech that's potentially going to be public? I mean, do you you think about that at all? I know when we talked, you did. We had a little conversation about it, but what do you think is happening there in terms of diversity for the leadership side of the biotech and big pharma, and what happens for you in the future?
Well, I think leadership in biotech and big pharma lacks diversity in general. You know, I think, you know, when it comes down to having African Americans, you know, as the leader of biotechs or big pharma companies, there's few and far in between. It's just that they're not given the opportunity. And for lack of a better, whether it's your pedigree, whether it's the color of your skin, whether it's, you know, what you've done in the past, I think it's something that has to be addressed, and it's not going to be addressed. And I think, you know, that's what sets you apart from others. You know, you're willing to take a risk and say, you know, hey, you know, I'm going to look at this based on, you know, what you've done in the past and what you can do in the future. And, you know, I think, you know, the success of this organization will prove that you took a risk and it paid off, and maybe in the future big pharma and other biotech should employ African-American candidates.
Yeah, I didn't think you were a risk, but we have a difference of opinion there. I don't think I took any risk. I think your background speaks for itself. One of the things I don't think the audience is aware of is that the people that have developed Liposol, amazing scientists at USF, amazing chemists, really spent the time already doing it.
One of the 10 best chemists in the world.
Right. So it's strange to me. It's going to be anecdotal. It's kind of a little crazy, actually, that this small little company identifies with USF, this potential drug, and that you spend billions of dollars on something where we already have lithium. And then it's amazing to me that University of South Florida and these really talented scientists have developed this, and we were able to get it. And you see big pharma spending so much money on solving this, and to have this little kind of startup, you know, you theoretically think of Silicon Valley like a garage biotech, which is the way you run it, really low cost and you know, virtual, having such a promising drug.
Well, I think that's what's great about you. You said you invest in undervalued assets. And then when you think about it, no, there's literally 20 years science backlog sitting on lab benches at universities and research centers like University of South Florida. And it's just, you know, having the person with the tenacity and basically having, you know, the I don't want to say balls, but, you know, and having the person with the vision to go in and impact, make just a big impact within the space, and, you know, taking these science, you know, through development and commercializing the products,
right,
you know, I think is very difficult. I mean, but there is 20 years worth of science sitting there. Mm-hmm. So kudos to you for actually, you know, picking up the phone and making that difficult call.
Well there's
4 years ago.
There's a lot of people that have helped, though, too. I mean, Phil Mansour, your first CEO, brought us Tamnet.
Yeah.
Tamnet brought us you. I know Gary was really involved and helping along the lines. And we brought in you brought in some talented people. You have a lot of contacts.
Yes.
So it's a virtual company with really a who's who.
Absolutely.
In the space. I'm really impressed with it. I do not consider myself, other than helping get some money and wanting to do this, anything more than that. I mean, yeah.
Well, if you didn't start the ball,
yeah,
if
I appreciate
you didn't get
that.
The ball rolling,
yeah,
you know, none of this would have happened.
Well,
so that's really good.
Yeah, but you know, and obviously we'll see what happens. But I the most exciting thing for me is that we're going to document this in a podcast, and for the audience out there, he's running a really exciting biotech, Alzheimer's Neuro, that has one mission, and that is basically we have this tagline to making Alzheimer's just a memory. We're really dedicated to that space, and from that, we're getting lucky. We think we've gotten lucky with Liposol. We think we're going to get lucky in the future with Liposol and Child 22W.
Absolutely.
I know that you have some other things in the pipeline you're working on.
Yes.
But we hope this little tiny biotech does some crazy things, and so far with the FDA, it's went well. We hope that you, the audience, can get the word out to people. We don't know how many people will see this. Obviously, it's a new podcast, but this drug, you gotta mark this down in your calendar. You gotta write it down somewhere. What he's doing with Alzheimer's Neuro, what his team's doing with Alzheimer's Neuro is remarkable.
I think within the next year, we're gonna have we're gonna become known, of having something that's extremely exciting, for the world.
Right.
I think, we're going to have a lot of more allies than we do now.
So I wanted to do this podcast. You guys have seen me do Grant Cardone. There's a lot of other exciting people I'm doing work with, but nothing's more exciting than what Stefan's working on and his team. And so I encourage you to pay attention to Alzheimer's Neuro and remember Stefan Jackman's name. And we'll see what happens over the next year and a half. It's going to be exciting to watch.
I think it's going to be fantastic.
Thanks a lot for coming
Thank
in.
Thank you.
Thanks, buddy.
There's a reason for it.